And welcome to their episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to yet another bowl game victory as your Golden Gophers go down into Phoenix, go down into the home of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Chase Field, and somehow escape the clutches of defeat yet again and come up with a couple of huge plays to beat the New Mexico Lobos in overtime 20-17. And joining us for the last time this year, as he did for the majority of the last few months, is my second cousin, former Golden Gopher offensive lineman. And Derek, if I have to hear it one more time from some of our listeners that come up to me in person and say Derek Burns is the greatest thing since sliced bread, they are right. But we're glad to have you back on the podcast here for one final time here in 2025. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. It's my pleasure. I've really enjoyed another season, and every season is unique and not lacking in talking points. So love talking college football with you guys.
All right, let's talk about this Gophers 20-17 overtime victory over the New Mexico Lobos. This game, in many ways, was kind of a reflection of the entire season. The Gophers started entirely too slow on offense, found their stride later in the game, ultimately was able to find the victory and was able to make clutch plays down the stretch, which propelled them to victory, led by some really young guys, namely on offense, Drake Lindsey and Jalen Smith. And then the irony to me, as I mentioned in the group chat, as I was able to rewatch the game, we started the season with Jalen Smith trying to catch the ball with his body and then arguably makes two of the best hands catches of the entire season for two touchdowns on two incredible throws from Drake Lindsey. A really fun bowl game, in a bowl game that I watched that felt a lot like the Gophers were actually more dominant than the score ever indicated. You saw New Mexico trying to pull out kind of all the stops. They pulled out lots of gadget plays. They tried to run a fake punt, which was ultimately unsuccessful. But, you know, the Gophers didn't execute nearly as well as they probably wanted to. And they left some on the table. But at the end of the day, they did find a way to find the victory. So, Derek, in this game that saw the Gophers, you know, on offense, you know, amass not as many yards as people maybe would have liked, and maybe not be as efficient as they would have liked, what did they try to do to combat this New Mexico Lobos defense?
Yeah, so a couple things I think that were different and maybe a couple that were the same as what we've seen during the regular season. New Mexico played a lot more zone. We've seen this year with Drake Lindsey's efficiency against zone defenses, most have played man coverage, and this was a little different. I think that actually, the way they played zone, it's hard for me to tell sometimes on the TV copy exactly what type of zone, but it looked like some version of a robber defense where you bring a free safety down post snap to defend passes in the middle. And I think that had Drake rattled a little bit in the first quarter and a half, but it was good to see him adjust and kind of settle in. And I think the coaches reacted to it. So I think that got Minnesota off of their, you know, rhythm, at least early. Something that we saw from the defense that we've seen all year, and stop me if you've heard this before, a lot of movement from the front seven of New Mexico on defense. And that continued to give fits to the Gophers offensive line, didn't allow them to create any sort of rhythm or much success at all running the football with consistency. So I think those were a couple of things we found. And, you know, one of my takeaways and what I had in my notes here was, you made a point to say the game was probably a little bit more dominant than it looked. And that's what I had down. I mean, I have four plays, single plays that Minnesota were easy touchdowns that they didn't connect on any of the four. And I know as a fan, it's natural to go back and do this after every game and say, well, if we would have done this and would have done this and would have done this, you know, yeah, that's football. But I think in this game in particular, that was certainly exacerbated. I mean, you had the 4th-and-1 trick play with a fumbled snap. You had a safety stumble and fall on a pass play that Drake ended up getting pressure. If he wouldn't have got pressure, it would have been a easy pitch and catch for a touchdown. And there were a couple more in there. So those were some of my takeaways. And ultimately, Minnesota found a way through a couple of great plays through, as you mentioned, Drake and Jalen Smith to do just enough to balance this, I think, good effort from the Gopher defense.
Well, I'm just glad that the first quarter went how the first quarter went all season long. And I tweeted this out during the game, and I don't know that we've specifically referenced this on the podcast, but Parker Fleming, friend of the podcast, he puts out EPA per quarter. What's EPA? Expected points added per quarter. Then all that is offensive, defense, special teams all combined together. And your Minnesota Golden Gophers will end the season as one of the bottom 10 worst teams in college football in the first quarter. Now, it's not just the offense, because you remember the defense also struggled in the first quarter all year, but it is also the offense, where yet again, first offensive drive, they don't get points. Now, why don't they get points? Because the bane of my existence continued to be true one final time, and that is on a third down, New Mexico sends a 3-man pressure versus 5 Big Ten offensive linemen and immediately get in the face of Drake Lindsey, with both guards looking for work, not finding it, standing there on their unemployment, which doesn't do anybody any good. So it was as someone who watched that game through the press box and was there, and I know one of the questions that people want me to answer too is, boy, it sounded like there was a lot of Lobos fans there. There were. I bet you half the state of New Mexico was there supporting that team. But that being said, I still think it was probably 55-45 Gopher fans. I can just tell you the New Mexico fans were bringing it, and that sounded like that on the TV copy. But this was not one of Drake Lindsey's best games. It was one of, I would probably say, it was probably his worst game since Iowa, and he is incredibly lucky that he did not throw a turnover, where if you just look at the box score stats, completing 64% of his passes with no turnovers, a couple of huge touchdowns, you'd be thinking, wow, Drake actually played really well. Drake did play really well in spots, but my goodness, especially early in the game, did he get away with quite a bit. So I think even with all of this, I'm just so glad to now be able to turn the page on so many different aspects of this offense, where whether it's going to be the 2025 offensive line, where I went through it in my GIF rewind at gopherillustrated.com, but I am just so tired of running into even boxes or just seeing guys whiff immediately. And by the time Darius Taylor gets the carry, there's not even a shot for this play to happen. I think about his 38-yard scamper. There's a run blitz off the backside. He makes a man miss, and because the tight end doesn't get his head to the play side linebacker, which I don't know how that doesn't happen, that run was made a lot harder than it needed to be. I mean, Derek, I'm trying to even think where I want to go here. Is I'm well aware of the consternation from the fan base, the consternation from the hardcores, the casuals, on an 8-5 win season, and I know I'm kind of essentially putting the cart ahead of the horse here. But I do want to ask you this question before we get position by position even, is I'm ready to turn the page on a myriad of aspects. I did mention one of them. It's the 2025 offensive line that just could never find physicality, could never find execution on a consistent basis. I mean, you saw Minnesota replace their right tackle in overtime and then immediately get beat with a new right tackle, and Drake Lindsey gets sacked again. But I also think it's coaching, and I know a lot of folks somehow believe that I'm on the take, which is incredibly funny to me because I wish you knew of the interactions behind the scenes with stuff like that. But it's also, can Brian Callahan, Minnesota's offensive line coach, coach a non-RPO offensive line? And also, can Greg Harbaugh's scheme adapt again to the personnel that they have, because they haven't been able to run the football largely in 3 years with him? Now, I would also tell you, look at the personnel that he was running the football with in 2023 when it was Jordan Newbin for half the season. Yeah, they had Darius last year and they still weren't able to do it. I get it. And then Darius in this game, essentially every game, Darius Taylor was healthy and he got 19 or more carries, the Gophers ran the football at a pretty good clip, even in this game. Darius, 24 carries, 116 yards, and a touchdown. But where does this rank for you among the most frustrating coaching scheme and personnel offenses all blending together and whatever percentage you put the blame in? But how frustrating of an offense was this to watch on a weekly basis for you?
Well, boy, there's a lot there. Just a couple points on the offensive line. I agree with you for the most part on how you've characterized things. I think just taking a step back, in the time we've been doing the podcast, this is the most backfield penetration that I've seen from defenses in run and pass. So if you think about, well, why has the running game been so inconsistent? I mean, really, guys, outside of the Nebraska game, they really didn't look clean or efficient or, I guess, dominant running the football. Maybe the non-conference, but outside of that, I know the numbers add up, and like you said, when Darius was healthy, but outside of that game, it just wasn't consistent. And why was that? I mean, the amount of backfield penetration where the running back's getting the handoff and there's at least one defender already in the backfield 2-3 yards is just, that's a non-starter, other than what we saw in the bowl game where Darius, you know, runs a spin cycle on that defender and then takes it 30 plus yards. I mean, that's a miraculous play by your running back. But outside of that, usually it's going to be a tackle for loss, or you're going to fight to get back to the line of scrimmage. Same thing we saw on pass defense, where just too much pressure on pass protection, whether it was a 3-man, 4-man, I'm not talking blitzes here. So that to me was the core of the issue. And then to your point, Ryan, why is this happening? I think just trying to put together some different thoughts. I don't have a silver bullet answer for you, but at times Minnesota looked better running the ball out of a lighter, more spread concept package. Now, the problem with that, in other words, what am I talking about? So 10 personnel, 11 personnel, one tight end, zero tight ends, spread the defense out, run zone, and this really plays into what I think they have in the offensive line, which is an athletic offensive line. It's not a very physical offensive line, and they look better in those positions. The problem is this. This is a pro-style offense, and it's going to be a pro-style offense with Drake and Harbaugh running it. That they're committed to that. It's not going to change. Could they mix in some RPO concepts? Could they mix in more light personnel? Sure. But I think what you see is what you get from a scheme perspective. They're committed to that. Now, you can still run zone. You can still run power, these different running schemes out of pro personnel. But that's really where it's when they've been in too tight end, running down in distances, trying to run zone. That's where it just hasn't been there. It hasn't been there. So then what do you do? Well, if you're not going to change to an RPO or a more spread concept offense, I think they need to look at the run schemes they're actually running within it. Does that mean less zone? Does that mean more misdirection? Does that mean more power, counter, things like that? And they actually did tinker with a little bit of that in the bowl game, and I think had some success running out of I formation. They ran a touchdown play. It was a nice kind of like a backside power isolation play. They hadn't shown that. And, you know, they actually showed some sprint out passing, which was a new concept they showed in the bowl game. Be interesting to see if that comes back next year, which helps alleviate pressure. So I think for things that the coaches can control, they need to look at some of these. If with this personnel, they need to look at some of these different concepts. I think gone are the days of, hey, we're going to live and die by inside zone. This is the type of team. It's not working. So that's very long-winded answer, Ryan, but it was frustrating. Just the amount of, I guess, lack of explosive plays still, but then also the inconsistency running the football is just what had them in fits and starts the whole year.
Well, and that's the whole thing, and I'm glad you got long-winded on my Dan Barrero-esque question there that took 45 minutes to get out of my mouth. But it's coaching, it's personnel, and it's scheme. And the question is everyone willing to adapt to that? Where you're going to have new players on the right side of the offensive line next year. Where is it going to be? Jaden Ball? Is it going to be DJ Shipp? Is it going to be Brett Carroll? Will it be Tony Nelson? Is there a portal right tackle coming that I continue to talk about on GopherIllustrated.com? It's also, can Brian Callahan coach more power, which is an aspect I think they should go more to, because when I hear the smartest person I know, football, especially offensive line-wise, tell all of you that this is the most backfield penetration he's watched, and Derek Burns has watched an exponential amount of Gopher football in his life, that should scream, the red flag should be blowing it, you know, gale force winds there for you. Is stuff has to change there. And then obviously Harbaugh's scheme needs to too. And I know there's a lot of people that want Harbaugh gone. I'm going to be the first to tell you, Greg Harbaugh and Danny Collins, I fully expect both of them to be retained here going into 2026. And yeah, Harbaugh's scheme is also among the things that have to continue to change. But I even look at looking forward to that 2026 offensive line. This should be among the most athletic, if not the most athletic offensive line that they've had. Between Nathan Roy, Greg Johnson, I'd say Jaden Ball. We'll see what happens at right tackle. Is it DJ Shipp, whoever it may be? That would lean, let's get big boys moving in space. That's outside zone, that's stretch zone, that's whatever it may be. But to Derek's point, none of it matters if by the time Darius Taylor or whoever is taking the snap immediately has someone in his face because somebody gets beat by a shift or a stunt or whatever it may be. So, look, I know I'm putting the cart ahead of the horse here. There's a whole offseason to talk about it, but I am just so frustrated, as many people are, with the things that plague this offensive line. Now, Derek, you mentioned the fourth and one where Minnesota attempts to do a trick play. Doesn't work. Why doesn't it work? Because Ashton Beer snaps it directly into the right forearm of the upback Frank Bierman. How does that happen, Ryan? Well, instead of snapping it directly between the legs of Drake Lindsey, that snap is going at about a 45 degree angle and never had a shot. It should have probably went about 4 feet over Darius's left shoulder. I mean, that snap was never going to be good. You also mentioned that in the third quarter, Greg Johnson gets beat across his face by a blitzing linebacker. If that does not happen, Drake Lindsey, who is working off his first read, which was Coy Parrish out of the slot. They were trying to run a slot fade with Coy Parrish. Turns out it's zone. Well, guess what? Because it was zone, Jalen Smith, who's the slot receiver on that, or on the outside receiver running towards the middle of the field, you can see it clear as day on the GIF rewind. The center, I'll call him the center field safety here, slips. And by the time Drake gets first to second read and sees that and starts to load up, that blitzing linebacker who crosses the face of Greg Johnson just plants Drake in the turf, and it's unfortunate. And you could see how upset Jalen Smith was, because all Drake had to do was find him, and he did find him. But I mean, that would have been a walk-in touchdown. You also have the Drew Bibber one, which I know there was also a lot of consternation about Minnesota. We'll get into special teams. Trust me, we will. But Anthony Smith gets the guy on the ground on the fake punt, and then on the first play, they take a shot to the end zone. And then on third down, Drake just misses Drew Bibber across the center of the field. I mean, he is wide the F open, and that ball gets sailed over him, or else that might be a touchdown. I mean, that was the day that it was for Drake, where he either didn't have enough time, he got antsy, or he just missed throws. But then you also have to, in that same breath, say that first touchdown to Jalen Smith is one of the best throws you'll see from a Gopher quarterback. I wish I could convey to you visually, and I tried to in the GIF rewind, that Jalen Smith wasn't even in the end zone by the time Drake Lindsey figured out the coverage and threw that off his back foot. I called it a Lucky the Leprechaun throw, where that thing was a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. I mean, that thing was, you couldn't place that ball in a better spot, and it was an outstanding catch. Plus, Derek, do you want to break down the nuances of the final touchdown where the center field safety there gets his eyes peeking on Drew Bibber? Why are his eyes on Drew Bibber? And because of that, he doesn't see Jalen Smith cross his face. Because I think a lot of people think that the safety should have made the play. Well, his eyes weren't there. Jalen Smith's eyes were on Drake. And that was the difference maker there in the end, besides Jalen Smith just having another outstanding catch.
Yeah, incredible. Two incredible throws, two incredible catches. And yeah, the last play, that's the purpose of your first deep threat. That safety has to check deep threat, even though they're backed up against end zone. They have to check the first player down the field. And so often you're going to use the tight end or slot receiver to try and freeze the safety or at least draw his attention away so that you can get something else open. It's exactly what happened. And all you need is a step in the end zone for something like that and an accurate throw. And great to fit that into the slot. And that's one of the reasons we've talked about Drake being so deadly is his accuracy and putting it into those type of spots. And that was enough to do it and ultimately win the game.
All right, maybe just to close out for the Gophers on the day, the offensive output maybe wasn't what you wanted, but they did amass 252 yards of total offense. They had 105 on the ground, and they had 147 passing. As you said, Drake was kind of played that game in two parts where he started out and really struggled, but he came back and made some huge throws ultimately, which were the difference. I think one thing that we need to highlight is the fact that, maybe they should have had a couple turnovers, but didn't was huge. And then the other thing is the Gophers were uncharacteristically, well, maybe not completely uncharacteristically, but definitely partially uncharacteristically collecting penalties, right? And those penalties hurt them. They ended up amassing 9 for 87 total yards. That had to be frustrating. And a lot of those, Derek, were, again, procedural penalties on the offensive line. And that seemed to be a theme throughout the season.
Yeah, and I also want to make sure I mention before we come off of the offense, a little bit of credit to New Mexico. I mean, when you have a group of five team that had that successful of a season, there's got to be a reason. And I think, unlike you guys who prepped and studied before the game, I didn't know much about New Mexico coming into the game, but it was clear to me that their defense was really solid, particularly their front seven. I mean, we can lament the lack of consistency of the Gophers running the ball. It's been a theme all year, but at the same time, New Mexico's front seven was a pretty stout defense. And so I just wanted to make sure that we mentioned that as well. I don't have a lot of good things to say about their offense when we get to that, but defensively, I thought they were a good opponent and presented some good count. They punched above their weight, I think.
Spence Nowinski is a power four caliber defensive coordinator at a group of five school. That's part of why Jason Eck, who is a power four level head coach at a group of five school, is going to probably have the Wisconsin job this time next year, and I expect him to bring Nowinski with him. Now, I mean, that's a defense that coming in was the number one run defense in the Mountain West. I mean, they play with their hair on fire. That was their Super Bowl. They had their fans in the stands. I mean, I'm sure it felt like a home game to them, and you could see them bring the physicality play after play after play. I'd also be remiss if I didn't say it looked like number one, who was the best pass rusher in the Mountain West for them, Keyshawn James Newby. I think he got called for being offsides once. Twice. I mean, I think you could have called that twice. A few more times. But five offensive line penalties. I cannot stress to you how deeply I was giving a tissue massage to my temples as they kept piling up time after time after time. I'd also be remiss if we didn't touch on that Coy Parrish played 22 offensive snaps in this game. That is more than he played combined in any other game throughout the rest of the season. Now, why is that? Well, when Lemeke Brockington elects not to play in the game, when you're also missing guys like Kendrick Lanier, guys like Malachi Coleman, Javon Tracy, and Jalen Smith can't play every snap. I liked what they did with Coy on offense. I thought he was good when he was in there on offense. I thought he was a very willing blocker on the perimeter, which, Derek, my goodness, if you want some honest takes here, again, if you're listening to this as a parent, I don't hate your kid. I'm just telling you what my two eyes told me, both live and on the film. That may have been the worst run blocking effort from the receivers all season. Agree or disagree?
Well, they really missed Lemeke. I mean, yes. Lemeke is he's their number one run blocking wide receiver. In fact, one of the best run blocking wide receivers PJ Fleck has had in this era. I mean, he was excellent run blocking. And so they certainly missed him. And you're right, on the perimeter, there was a lot of misses, and especially when the Gophers are trying to get the ball to the perimeter in space and they can't block, you know, one perimeter defender.
With two guys. Yeah. Don't get me. I see I'm all wound up already. It's like 7 a.m. We're recording on software we normally don't do. We just appreciate Luke Buehr's willingness to come along with the fried with us. So, Coy, I thought, was good on offense. But, again, it was the Jalen Smith game where, because of the amount of guys that were out, someone needed to step up. And as we've laid out, Jalen Smith probably should have had 3 touchdowns in this game, and he had 2 of the best catches you'll ever see in a bowl game, freshman to freshman. He stepped up, and that was the player that I saw throughout the entire fall camp that was confident, making plays with his hands, and that was the game that they needed him to have. And I think deservingly so, he got the offensive MVP. Now it's, how do you continue to adapt the offense? How do you continue to change the offense? Because you know some of the pieces coming back. You know Drake Lindsey, you know Jalen Smith. I feel very optimistic about their chances with guys like Darius Taylor, guys like Javon Tracy. So how do you continue to adapt this offense so that they can, A, topic number one, run the bleeping football effectively? Now, we've outlined that already. It's not just one thing. There's not a magic button to press with that. But it's also continue to give Drake Lindsey talented pass catchers to throw to. I know that's something that the Gopher football staff is working actively on here in the portal, but when they needed to make plays, they did. But trust me when I also say punting the ball twice within an opponent's 40-yard line, it hurt my soul. It hurt every part of my soul to watch that twice. Now, that's not all on the offense. It's also the kicking game woes, which we'll get to when we talk special teams, but they did enough on offense, Luke. That's the name of the game here.
Before we kick it back to Luke, Ryan, I wanted to mention one thing about Coy. I talked about this in our group chat. He looked good on offense. He's a good athlete, and I think it was good to see him try some different things. I'm very surprised we haven't seen them use him on the goal line. Reason I mention that is Coy is as good at playing the ball as anybody they've had. In other words, whether that's offense or defense, he's just able to go up and win a 50-50 ball, or be able to read the arc and the flight of a ball and just make a play on the ball. And that to me just screams, put him in on the goal line, because, you know, your pass coverage is tighter. When you got the end zone there, the defense needs to cover less space. So your contested catch rate goes up dramatically when you're inside the red zone. And so I'm surprised that they didn't have him on, and hopefully they will going forward, at least try that out. Maybe they haven't practiced and it hasn't worked out. I could be wrong, but I would think that's a no-brainer to me, is to have him in on a goal line package and try to get him in single coverage or in zone coverage. Just throw a ball up to him, whether it's a corner route or a short slant or a jump ball, so to speak. And I think that would be a good way to use his skill, and maybe that's something we could look forward to next year.
Hold on, Luke. One last thing off that is, I also feel like we didn't talk enough about Darius Taylor, Darius Taylor was healthy, which means Darius Taylor was the best player on the field for the offense. I mean, Darius was fantastic. And I love watching a fully healthy Darius Taylor. I really hope he can find health next year. And if he can, now that it's not an odd year, a.k.a. the angry running back overlord, DD, whatever you want to call them, won't smite the room because it'll be an even year, 2026 next year. I just hope that young man can find health, because if he can put together 13 games or 12 games on tape of healthy ball like he did largely in 2024, I mean, this thing on offense could be really fun next year.
Yeah, one thing that, you know, the balls also offer us typically, Ryan, and I just want to get your comment, because I don't know the depth of this team like you do, but, you know, last year we saw someone like Nukase have a role on offense at wide receiver. This year we saw Julian Johnson get his first catch, and I will see he's a redshirt freshman. Is this someone they're high on? I was surprised. It was a name that I was not familiar with in this bowl game, but that can happen in bowl games.
I should mention too, Jameson Gears played one snap in this game.
Yeah.
First snap of the game. Why? Because he's got a knee injury that it was essentially, it's like in baseball terms, it's like who gets the start on opening day? Because there's one of 162 games that day. And they do some things where they put guys in positions and they may not necessarily have that role all season, but they want to get their name on the lineup card. So Jameson Gears got his name on the lineup card one final time. But because of that, I mean, you still saw them play Pierce Walsh and Frank Bierman, Drew Bibber. But you have to remember, too, Bibber and Bierman are also gone. So they were mixing in. Jacob Simpson got reps. Julian Johnson got reps. And Pierce Walsh, I think that's your trio next year, along with someone like Roman Voss, who can come in and play hopefully right away once he gets here in June. But, yeah, you can see Julian Johnson is a big-framed MF-er. Like, my man's got levers for days out there. And I don't think of him necessarily as the pass-catching tight end between him and Jacob Simpson, but you obviously saw he can catch the football. He was also the one leading out there in space there for Darius Taylor on his long run. Now, he's also the guy that should have got his eyes around to the play side linebacker to block him instead of getting too far inside. But that's going to come with experience is the hope.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. You know, offensively, you can have right to be frustrated. In the same respect, they found a way to They did find a way to score just enough points to win, and that, in a lot of ways, what is the most important thing. It maybe isn't aesthetically as pleasing as you'd like, or you don't like the late third down miraculous touchdowns, but nonetheless, it made for an exciting game. Let's catch a quick break. After the break, we will talk defense, we'll talk special teams, and we'll talk, you know, whatever else comes up.
Ryan, once again, we need to talk about our partners at Blue Horizon Energy. And we talked about previously that, honestly, energy prices are just growing rapidly. They're growing faster than the rate of inflation. If you look at their projections going into 2030, that the increase could be anywhere between 28 and 46%. It could be between 15, almost 16 cents to 18 cents. That's more than triple the cost in 2003. Ryan, the only way that you could get ahead of this if you're a grower or a business operator is to invest in renewable energies like solar array panels, like what Blue Horizon Energy installs.
Look, I know we have a lot of listeners on this podcast, and we love each and every one of you, but we know there's plenty of you in the ag community or in the commercial businesses. And energy, as Luke said, is only going up. So where can people go if they're trying to find a way to lower their cost, Luke?
If you want to learn more about ways to be able to save on those rising energy costs, go to bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron, fill out the form, and they will get in touch with you. Again, that is bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. Ryan, I always enjoy when we get a chance to interact with our listeners. And I heard recently, after one of the events on Oak Street for you, you ran into Austin, who you've talked about for the Burns Insurance Agency before. Yeah. And goodness gracious, that man has a story, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, he appreciated being on the podcast here as a loyal listener, and he appreciates everything we do, and we appreciate him for supporting those who support us. And I told the story here that my father at the Burns Insurance Agency saved him $700 compared to what he was previously paying. Well, he came up to me on Oak Street and he said, "Hey, Ryan, want you to know I just talked to him. He's going to be saving me, get ready for this, $1,000 this year with switching over to a different insurance company within the Burge Insurance Agency." And that's the beauty of being an independent insurance agent, is every single year the Burge Insurance Agency looks for the best rates and the best coverage for you, because all they want to do is give you the best service possible. Austin saved $1,000 just this past week. So if you are a Gopher fan in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, New York, Florida, or Utah, and you're looking to support those who support us, check them out today, insurancebyburns, all one word, .com, or email him directly, bill@insurancebyburns.com.
All right, let's talk about this Gopher defense. You know, they actually had a pretty solid day. I know that, Derek, you kind of already previewed the lead here in that the New Mexico offense was not particularly great. They ran a number of different gadget plays, obviously played two quarterbacks, but on the day they only amassed 204 total yards. They had 88 passing on 8 of 28 attempts, or sorry, on 15 of 28 attempts. So their yards per pass was only 3.1 yards. They did throw one interception that was caught by none other than John Nestor. And when it came to running the ball, they amassed 116 yards on 38 attempts with a 3.1 yard average. They only had one touchdown on the day. The other touchdown came on special teams, which we'll get to later. But in this specific instance, the Gopher defense, you know, was very good, and they were missing some people. But what Derek, did the Gophers do to have such a solid day on defense?
Well, a couple things. One thing that was different, this is the most zone coverage we saw from the Gopher defense, maybe all year, certainly up there, one of their top, you know, two, three games, which was interesting. I think there was some personnel changes. You saw Aiden Goosby getting more of a run. Zaquan Bryan was not playing. And so I think part of it had to do with different personnel, but also I think the Gopher coaching staff would have liked to play more zone. I mean, they don't want to be that one dimensional. Man coverage comes with its downsides, and to be sort of stuck in that all the time is limiting. And so I think that was a good thing to see them mix in more zone coverage, and they look good. You know, the zone looked good. It wasn't the obvious soft breakdowns that we had seen when they had tried zone other times during the year. So I think that was a good takeaway. And then to your first point about New Mexico's offense, I mean, they were physically overmatched up front, which is a good thing for Minnesota. But it also is, you know, part of it is the opponent, and Minnesota took advantage of that. Minnesota's front seven on defense had a very good day versus run and pass. I mean, basically to the point where New Mexico had to try and run with their quarterback in the second half because they were getting nothing out of just straight running plays with running back. And then passing the ball, you know, that's obviously not their forte, but when they were forced to do it at times, Minnesota was able to get almost immediate pressure in many cases just from their front four. So, physically a dominant game. It was nice to see the defensive line, which has been up and down at times, play a really, really good game. And then schematically, it'll be interesting to looking towards next year to see if we do see more zone mixed in, because I do think that zone and zone pressures is something they'd like to get back to that we saw more in the Heatherman year, that they were a bit limited this year, perhaps because of personnel and just the efficiency they've had in zone, that they had to play more man.
By the way, we're now 45 minutes into a podcast. Happy Anthony Smith game, where that was one of the most single-handed, single-game performances you'll ever watch from a Gopher defensive lineman. To give some context around what he did specifically, in the bowl game, he had four tackles for loss. That's the most ever in Gopher football bowl game history. His two sacks, they tie the record for a single game in the bowl game for Minnesota. You also add in the two absolutely massive pass deflections at the line of scrimmage. Because my argument to the listener right now, and I want to get both of your opinions on this before I go any further, maybe the most impactful play from Anthony Smith was not a sack. It was not a tackle for loss. It was third down with a minute to go. He gets his hands into the passing lane on what is a tunnel screen coming that, if it is caught, is probably a first down. Looking at the amount of space that young man had, probably would have ended the game then with New Mexico's kicker, who had missed one field goal all season. He deflects it. New Mexico has to punt. Agree or disagree, that was the most impactful single play from Anthony Smith.
I would agree. I would follow it up, though, closely with the fake punt tackle was also a really, really key play. Not to say that they would have converted it necessarily, because it's hard to tell. But yes, the deflected passes. I mean, that was, if there's anything we can pick at that the defense was not, you know, if there was a negative to this, too many third down conversions. And so, Ryan, you're right. That probably would have been another conversion. And ultimately, the knockdown was key.
Luke? Yeah. I would agree on that. I was going to bring up the fake punt as well. You know, he ends up with two deflected passes on the game. He being Anthony Smith, four tackles for loss, two sacks. And to your point, that really was, you know, he was really the game wrecker that Danny Collins talked about all season. And the reality is sometimes as a football player, you have to just do your job, right? And it maybe isn't the flashy stat, even though, you know, the fake punt is a tackle for loss. But him just staying home and doing his job was massive. And the same with just getting his hands up. I think there are many on the offense that could probably learn from this. And, you know, we'll get into this probably into the offseason more. But if Smith can be even a little bit more fundamentally sound, those stats probably pile up with time. But you're right, Ryan. Both of those plays were massive.
Yeah, and I think maybe Minnesota should learn something from Brian Flores' defense, which, look, I don't watch a ton of Vikings football because most of my Sundays are filled with doing breakdowns and podcasts and Gopher-related things. But I do know one thing about a Brian Flores defense. They get their hands in the passing lane constantly. Deflecting passes on the defensive line is a calling card for them. I mean, you think about someone like Andrew Van Ginkle and how many deflections or interceptions that young man has, just knowing, okay, if I don't initially win off the line, I'm going to get my eyes on the quarterback and know they're probably going to get the ball out quick, need to get my eyes on a swivel, get my hands up, and see what happens. Now, Anthony ends the season with 12 and a half sacks, which he is the first Gopher to do so since Luke's guy, Willie VanDesteeg, about 17 years ago now, and he's going to enter next season sixth all-time in sacks behind Derek. I believe you played with him. Do you know who the Gophers, I will say, career leader in sacks is?
I did play with him. It's Caron Riley.
It is, with 29 all-time. So if Anthony Smith gets 10 sacks next year, he will be the career leader in sacks. Oh, didn't you hear? Maybe the best Christmas present all Gopher fans got was after the game, Anthony Smith, as he's accepting his defensive MVP trophy, takes the mic and says, oh, by the way, I'm coming back. And I won't. He is signed with both Derek and the university, wants to come back. So Minnesota retaining their first team all Big Ten defensive lineman, obviously great news. You also look at his 17 and a half tackles for loss in the season, sixth most all time single season history, puts the career total at 31. He will enter next season eighth best in that regard. So Anthony Smith, making plays all over the field in a multitude of different ways. I also found it fascinating that they did go to that fake punt, by the way, when Minnesota kept their starting defense on the field, which should be an immediate alert for them to not to run the fake punt. Exactly. Because even if Anthony Smith, by the way, does not get that player on the ground and he just kind of forces him inside, the other player, there's a few that I think we should highlight, but the other player being Maverick Baranowski, who is playing with his hair on fire with a 17 total tackle performance, by the way, including 13 solos, which, my goodness, Maverick would have been waiting right there. But Anthony Smith, he is one of my favorite players to talk to. He's one of the most eclectic young men that you will meet in college football, or at least here at the University of Minnesota, because his interests go far and beyond the reach of what I would say normal 21, 22 year olds. I mean, I wrote about it back at Big Ten Media Days, where he's very much someone who enjoys greenery, where he's got bamboo trees in his apartment. He's got a bunch of different, hanging plants everywhere. Like, he loves to thrift. He loves fashion. Like, he is the modern day Gen Z football player, where you put him on the field, he is a terror. You take him off the field, it's not just, you know, eat, sleep, football. It's someone who's got a lot of other interests. So before I move on from Anthony Smith, I do want to allow you two to take the floor. And do you have anything else to say on Anthony?
I mean, it's really exciting to have him. I don't think he's near hit his ceiling. I mean, physically, he's an insane athlete, and he's been able to make plays. But he's still developing as a football player. And I think even in this last game and as the season went through, we've been able to see that. He's an incredible athlete. He's been an incredible athlete. But I think in terms of a football player, he's been somewhat of a late bloomer. And so I don't think he's hit his ceiling. I think it's exciting for Gopher fans to have a core to surround him in the center of coming back next year. And just a, like you said, and I don't think it was hyperbole, the Anthony Smith game. I mean, it was a dominating individual performance.
Yeah, it's really exciting to have him back. And I think the other thing is you compare him with, on the other defensive end with a Carter Mens and a Jackson Howard. Carter Mens especially, who had a really phenomenal freshman campaign. I haven't looked at any of the stats to compare him to other freshmen, but he popped for me a lot. I think the future is really bright for him as well. And, you know, you have to be able to supplement.
How old do you think Carter Mens is?
Isn't he a redshirt freshman?
He is a redshirt sophomore.
Oh, so I'm off. Sorry. But he is young and has popped for me. And excited about the future that he has. So you have to pair this with some defensive tackles left to get, whether that be guys that didn't get a ton of reps this year and sat behind Jalen Logan Redding and Devin Eastern, or you're gonna have to find people in the portal. That'll be the interesting thing for the Gopher staff to figure out. And they have a new coach. What is it? CJ Robbins is now leading the defensive line. Did I get that correct, Ryan?
Yeah, he's sliding over from rush ends. He's been elevated to defensive line. What does that mean? Well, CJ Robbins will go from coaching Carter Mens and Jackson Howard, among others, to he gets Anthony Smith, the five technique position, and the defensive tackles. Now, in his stead, and I know at least I'm reporting that Minnesota is going to replace him with Bobby April III, who, if that name sounds familiar to you, he was the outside linebackers coach for Paul Chryst at Wisconsin for 5 years. In the last 3 years, he has been the Stanford defensive coordinator. Sounds like he was not going to be retained by the new staff out there, so he's coming back to the Big Ten. He's going to be your new rush ends coach. So you've got a very experienced guy there to go with a CJ Robbins, who I think is probably around my age, a young 33-year-old man-ish. So you've got a combination of experience at rush end to go with what is, some youth, I would say, and a lot of energy with CJ Robbins as well. Now, I'm glad Luke brought up Carter Mens, though, because I mean, Carter ends the season with 9 tackles for loss, and that includes 8.5 starting in Big Ten play on. And even in this game, we did finally see, Derek, what I have been clamoring for, a strip sack, which, my goodness, I know they didn't jump on the football, but Carter Mens is the one to do so. But the play that I want to ask you about, Derek, is one that I still don't have answers to. And it's in the fourth quarter, I believe, where Carter Mens turns the corner and he hits the quarterback, or he's about to hit the quarterback. And the key part here is he does not deflect the pass. He does not deflect the pass that hits the offensive lineman in the helmet in the end zone. And I still cannot for the life of me understand, Derek, why that was an A, intentional grounding, because there was no running back in there, which intentional grounding in the end zone should result in a safety, or B, why it was not illegal touching, because if an offensive lineman is the first one to touch the football, which, look, it hits him in the helmet, it is what it is, that should also be a flag. Derek Burns, explain to me why there was no flag.
That's illegal touching. They missed it. I don't know why they didn't call it. Illegal touching is either if an eligible receiver comes out of bounds and is the first to come back in bounds and touch the ball, or if an ineligible receiver is the first to touch a pass, which was the case. I have no idea. You're right. The ball wasn't deflected. That would obviously negate that, but they just completely missed it, and it was in a key situation. I believe in college that is not ruled a safety, even though he was in the end zone, where in the NFL I think it is, but someone can correct me on that. But I mean, I hit the group chat right away with that, and like, I mean, the announcers didn't pick it up. Nobody mentioned it. Ryan, I don't know if post game, if you brought it up or anybody asked about it to the coaching staff, but yeah, it was a miss. The refs missed it.
I will say I did ask some people very close to the head coach. Did he ever get an explanation from the refereeing crew about why that wasn't? I'm told that the crew never explained any further to PJ Fleck why that was not a flag. So I love that for that Big 12 crew. I really do, Luke.
Yeah, you know, I called that out live in the game. And as you guys know, I didn't watch the game live because I'm here with family. So I watched it on delay with my dad, which was really fun to be able to do. But yeah, I called it out live. I was like, how is that not a flag? And then I was questioning if it was even reviewable. Which I don't believe it is. I wasn't able to get a clear answer, at least one that I trust. I was skeptical of what the large language model told me, so I didn't go into the actual rule book and look. But I did find that interesting, and as you pointed out, Derek, it was a huge play, and they clearly missed that.
That'd be interesting if you're able to challenge that, because I know illegal touching where a receiver that comes out of bounds and comes back in, I believe that is reviewable.
It would make sense that if you're challenging for illegal touching, and to that point, Derek, if that's reviewable, then it should be also reviewable at the line of scrimmage. I don't know why there would be that big of a difference why it would be that nuanced within the college football playoff.
College football
rule book, I should say.
Yeah, and I didn't look to kind of verify. When I asked the question, it kind of gave me a rule based on the NFL rule interpretation, because I probably didn't specify college football when I asked the large language model. But at the end of the day, I didn't spend the time. And to be able to challenge that, you would have had to call a timeout, right? At that point in the game, I'm not sure PJ was interested in.
You know how it goes from first half timeout usage, spend them like you got them. Second half timeout usage, spend him when you absolutely have to for him. I mean, we've now learned through that for now 9 years.
Yeah. Okay. We probably should touch on the secondary real quick. They did get another turnover. John Nestor made a nice play on a very poorly thrown ball that, you know, was again, probably, I think to their credit, I don't remember, Derek, you can probably correct me if I'm wrong, but they were playing zone and that ball was, you know, tried to get over the one
correct
into the other, and he just overthrew it.
Yep, correct.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing you're going to knock this defense for, because they only give up 10 points, is, I mean, you're talking about the third downs where there were way too many. It'd be, oh, great, tackle for loss, second and 11, incomplete pass, third and 11, third down completion. This extends the drive because New Mexico was 8 of 18 on third down. Now, it didn't result in more points. Like I said, the defense only themselves gave up 10 points, but Minnesota just overwhelmed them up front. I also think if you just look at the box score, you would say Devin Eastern didn't have a great day where he has one tackle. I feel like Devin Eastern had much more of an impact than that shows. And Jason Eck even talked about it afterwards. He's talking about how, yeah, it was Anthony Smith, but also 91 in the middle there. He was a load tonight, and I agree with that. So guys like, again, Maverick Baranowski with the second most amount of tackles and from any Gopher ever in a bowl game was 17. You've also got the Anthony Smith game. Coy Parrish plays every snap on defense, including having a key early tackle in open space to prevent another third down conversion. John Nestor ends the season with 6 interceptions. Like, this defense ended on a high note where the snow globe game, I don't know how much to like read into it because it was the snow globe game, but they were better. They forced turnovers in this game. They overwhelmed a New Mexico offensive line. And that, I think that really spun their tires for the Lobo offense. But you also look at the season as a whole for them, where it was, this is the first time away from Huntington Bank Stadium where the opposing quarterback didn't turn into Johnny Unitas. Do the listeners of this audience know who Johnny Unitas is, you think?
Yes, because I've met a lot of our listeners.
You're so rude to them.
they definitely know who he is.
All right. They turn into Fran Tarkenton. They turn into Dante Culpepper. Should I? They made this New Mexico quarterback look like Joe Webb, who Vikings lore Joe Webb to many of you, but I don't know, man. I think there's pieces of this defense that it's exciting to get back. Anthony Smith among them. Anthony sure. Smith, Maverick Baranowski, Kerry Brown, John Nestor. I mean, there are pieces here, but then you also look at a spot like defensive tackle where, I mean, they're going to be losing 90%+ of their defensive tackle snaps from this year. And whether that is replacing them with internal guys like Jalen Hicks, Riley Sunrum, the lost year that was Theo Randall, who starts the year in a boot, ends the year in a boot, never plays a snap. I mean, they have a lot of pieces they have to figure out, or even like, what is Jackson Howard's best position? That's something I've been talking about on the Gopher Illustrated message boards, because I don't know that it's rush end. I don't know. I just know with him, he's either got to lose weight to gain more speed. He's either got to get a lot better in his technique and his fundamentals, because I look at the pressure rates on PFF and everything, and they are not kind to him. Is it moving him to five technique? There's a lot of different things that Danny Collins and CJ Robbins and Bobby April have to figure out over the next couple of weeks here about roster construction for next year, where it's, what are we comfortable going into the season with? Because I do think you obviously have pieces returning on the back end, like Nestor, like Kerry Brown. And we'll see with some other guys too, but I'm just glad the defense did their part, and I'm really glad that Anthony Smith got his hands in the passing lane, because there was no momentum on their side in that fourth quarter, which leads us into, for the final time this season, Luke, my favorite part of this team.
Yeah, you know, the kick return touchdown.
Inexplicable.
Well, I don't know how, like, one, like, we can just talk about the flaws, right? Like, one, how do you not kick it into the end zone because you know how good this guy is? And
I mean, the same thing they had done through three quarters every time.
Yeah, exactly. Denneberg, he just had to have missed kick. It couldn't have been strategy. Like, I don't know if you asked that question, but to me,
it's did. And Fleck hated it, by the way.
Oh, really?
Absolutely despised it, which that's fine. Look, I'm not there to be his friend.
Yeah. But it was a missed kick, right? Or did he not answer it?
if you've listened to a PJ Fleck press conference in 9 years,
yeah,
you know he's not going to 95% of the time throw the player under the bus, and he did not throw the player under the bus.
Sure.
You know, he kind of said we wanted to test the the coverage team, which I don't believe for a second, because to Luke's point, if you didn't listen to the preview episode, why this entire sequence was so bleeping stupid is New Mexico has a first team All Mountain West kick returner. He's the best kick returner in the conference. It's why Minnesota had kicked the ball out of the end zone on kickoff the entire game. Why give him an opportunity? So Darius Taylor goes off the left side into the end zone. It's 14-6. You have all the momentum. New Mexico, offensively to that point in the second half, had like 28 yards of total offense. They weren't doing anything. And then Denneberg hits one directly to the center of the field between the hashes, right at the goal line. And when I'm saying I'm not joking, where that young man then just ran straight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he ran within 5 yards of where he started laterally and was never touched. Not only was he not touched, the man next to him, the other returner who is leading the way through the hole, I mean, he was never touched. He's looking for work. He couldn't find work.
Yeah.
And he just runs 100 yards straight for a touchdown. I can't even.
Luke. To me, the thing, like, the thought was he must have miskicked it so bad that the kickoff team, because of
out of position,
out of position, like they weren't even gonna try, they weren't even trying, right? Like they didn't expect it, and it just ended up being such a missed kick that everything was completely pear-shaped, and then you get the result you got.
Multiple special teams penalties in this game again too.
Yes, gosh,
like
you,
that kickoff return is the, if Minnesota would have lost that, I mean, that's the turning point.
Oh,
I mean, you had no business kicking it to him for no reason. Or even look at, why does Minnesota punt from the opponent's 38 and 37 yard line twice? It's because they don't have a kicker.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, yes, I actually that didn't bother me as much as it was like, they knew what they had. both defensively, and they also knew what they didn't have, which was in a kicker.
Well, multiple things are true. We're New Mexico, again, yeah. you're playing to back them up in their own end. One of the punts from Tom Weston went into the end zone, which Fleck immediately gave him strong thoughts and feelings. I want people to know, if there is one thing PJ Fleck hates more than I would say 99% of everything in the game of football, it's when his punter punts the ball into the end zone. I cannot stress to you how much he hates that. So next time you watch a Gopher football game in 2026, when that happens, watch how he lights up the punter. Cause I just know enough about that now. Again, I think the other one was downed by Javon Tracy at like the 4, but because you don't have a kicker you can trust, like who had been 2 of 7 from 40 plus, had already lost. Again, it's not just him, but the whole Northwestern game debacle. Like, I'm so ready to turn the page on special teams too, where it's like, okay, Tom Weston, yeah, I think he had a pretty good year. Do I think he had an all Big Ten year? I think he was pretty good. I don't disagree with it. I think Alan Sukup is a long snapper. I think Minnesota fans should be happy to have him. But the kicking game and the lack of – it's just like every time we come on this podcast, Luke, it's were they a net negative or were they a net positive? And for I don't know how many straight times, like, it's a net negative again. And, again, it's not just Ligachevsky. It's also a PJ Fleck problem because it's been this way largely for 9 years now. Mm-hmm. Now, would I seriously explore – moving on from Ligachevsky, considering the first year he gets here, he turns Dragon Kesich from the Big Ten kicker of the year to Minnesota misses more field goals, or I should say the most amount of field goals in the Big Ten. Yeah. And then this year, Minnesota misses the most amount of field goals in the Big Ten for a second straight year. That's a problem. Like,
yeah,
that's a problem. And you brought in your guy from Syracuse. It didn't work out. Well, guess what? You still put your name on the line. So I'll be very curious to see what I continue to hear here prior to the transfer portal opening, because I don't think you can go into next season with just Daniel Jackson as your primary place kicker when even towards the end of the season, you watched him in practice, not you specifically, Luke, but PJ Fleck did. You watched him in practice all year, yet you never went to him. So I will be very curious, but that kickoff to the center of the field, right at the goal line, to the first team all Mountain West guy. Oh, I cannot stress to you how much pain and anxiety that brought me, and the poor, unfortunate souls of Andy Greeter and Dan Owen and Randy Johnson next to me in the press box. They knew about it.
Yeah. The other thing, you know, you mentioned the Tom Weston game. That game was kind of a, encapsulation of his season, right? If you caught him on the right kicks, he was great. And then on the other ones, you're just like, oh man, it's close, but you just didn't do it right. It wasn't like a complete shank per se, but he has room to improve as well. I when he got the Big Ten honor, my question was like, you know, did enough people just see him in the right games and then pick him? Or we pick in some box scores, or they're really just is punting down in the Big Ten, because I thought he was good. I didn't think he was great. And it'll be interesting to see. There's room for improvement this next season. I hope there is improvement as well.
Derek, any thoughts?
Well, here's one positive. I actually liked the fact that they kicked from the opponent's side of the field twice. I think we've seen, or at least speaking for myself here, I've just seen too many games where this Gopher special teams as a whole has lost the field position battle. And rather than seeing two more missed 50-some-yard field goals and then giving the opponent the ball at midfield or near it, let's pin him down. And, one of them rolled into the end zone. It's not ideal. But, again, it was nice to see us, I guess, win the field position battle in those cases where I think the other one got fielded at the 10. And so, yeah, forced the offense, which had been struggling to, you know, go the length of the field, which, you know, so I actually had no problem with that at all. I think Luke's probably onto something. It was probably a missed kick on the return touchdown. And, you know, for whatever this is worth, it felt like there were about five defenders on that Gopher kickoff because, like, there
Everybody
was nobody.
Out of the bleeping lanes, let me tell you.
Yeah. So, yeah. Very ill time. Not that there's ever a good time to give up a field, a kicker turn for a touchdown, but very, very poorly timed. Just swung the momentum big time.
Luke, what day will my pants come off in the press box? Because now we get to go another 247 days or whatever it is until Eastern Illinois, where it has still been since 2018 since your Gophers have had a freaking kicker, a punt return touchdown, man.
Yeah,
I just want big plays on special teams, and they only happen against Minnesota, but what do I know?
I will take just more consistent special teams play over the big explosive play like the kick return. I know you're hung up on that, but I just want more consistency there, whether that be in the kicking, punting, or coverage. That to me would be ideal.
My hope and prayer to the overlord deity that looks over Gopher football for 2026 is league average place kicking. That's all I want. I don't want to come on this podcast at the end of the next season and say, for the third straight year, your Golden Gophers have missed the most amount of kicks in the Big Ten. Just, they have to figure out the place kicking game. I mean, that's where this thing starts to me.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Okay, just maybe to close out.
I do want to get Derek's thoughts on, Derek, I want you to put on your Dinky Town Athletes hat here, because as a media member, I'm well aware of the announcements to come back and how you guys have partnered with Cub Foods, who is my favorite little grocery store, the giant conglomerate that be. That's where I do all my shopping already. So I was happy to see that they have partnered with you guys to help, retain players. They're part of the announcements that you guys are putting out. Can you give our listeners, because I know that's one of the things a lot of people are curious about, from a Dinky Town Athletes perspective, how did this Cub Foods partnership come to be, and what can you tell me about it?
Well, Cub has been a longtime partner of Gopher Sports Properties for traditional advertising through Gopher football. So they advertise at the stadium and have a number of other assets that they purchase every year. And so, like others, we've partnered with a number of other Gopher Sports sponsors. We approached them, and the folks at Gopher Sports Properties approached them and determine if they want to include athletes, in this new world of NIL and their advertising. And that was something that they were interested in. And obviously the retention announcements and such are good, they have good metrics on social media in terms of engagement and such. And so it made sense to find a corporate partner to help, combine on those announcements. And so it was great to see them step up, and we've had good success. It's this NIL world is often difficult to find competitive numbers because everything is sort of hidden, and you don't want to show your cards, so to speak. But I would just say that Minnesota has had a really good has done really well in the corporate or business NIL space. And I think that's largely because of our relationship with Gopher Sports Properties, but also the market that we're in. We're not in a small college town. We're in a large metro area. And so we've been able to leverage a lot of those business assets and in finding NIL deals. So appreciate you bringing it up. I think the fans have really reacted positively to it, and it's something we'll definitely look to keep doing going forward.
And the other thing I want to get your guys' thoughts on is something I chuckle because, look, I understand I run a message board for a living, and I think all of you should definitely think about joining me here over the next couple of weeks, where transfer portal opens on Friday. I would expect Minnesota to take double-digit guys out of it, but it's an 8-5 season yet again. And I know we've even had this discussion in the group chat where it's like, this team won 8 games. Last year's team won 8 games. And I look at the talent discrepancy between them, where Fleck loves to talk about it in his post-game press conferences, where it's like, Yeah, we got 8-9 guys on 53-man rosters or practice squads from last year. And then you look at what we did with this team. Well, it's like, okay, yeah, but you're also supposed to reload with things like that. And they, it was a year where Luke, it was about as frustrating of an 8-win team to watch, if that makes sense. Where, yeah, they won 8 games, but every game you were in the meat grinder. Every game you were waiting and pleading for them to put it all together. Where you think about the Cal game, I will put that one on the offense, where the offense couldn't figure it out. They fell apart after midnight. They also had the Coy Parrish bobble, which kind of sunk things as well. You look at the Northwestern game where the defense just refuses to get a stop. I mean, those two games specifically, I mean, there's also special teams issues within those two games, but how do you kind of view this season as a whole? Where it's, yeah, you won 8 games again, and I truly hope no one is taking that for granted, because the floor, and I wrote about this afterwards, the floor has never been more sturdy. Look, I don't pretend to work in the trades or something like that, where I know what an incredibly sturdy floor looks like or what type of material that would be, whether, I mean, I could throw concrete out there, whatever. But the floor has never been higher. Or if you're winning 8 games every year, that's great. But it's also okay to be frustrated that every flipping game, it's like, God, can this team just put it together? And they also never did.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting because there's the dynamic of they won all their home games and they lost all their road games and they found a way in their bowl game to win a neutral site game. And at the end of the day, I think expectations are heightened and that's what creates some of the frustration that exists. But I do think that fundamentally you're recruiting better athletes than maybe the Gophers have ever recruited. You've probably got the best quarterback in recent memory. Now we got to be able to see it in the second year. I think there was some optimism with Ethan and that just didn't come to fruition. Maybe the scheme wasn't a good fit for him, you know, et cetera. But with Drake, you can see some of the, you can project how this could work. Now you have to fit the pieces in around it. I think it's okay to have some heightened expectations. And I think it's also okay to be disappointed when those expectations aren't met. I will say though, I do remember when we were not this competitive and I hated it. I was more frustrated then than I am now. It doesn't mean that I don't want to win. It just means that I like being more competitive. And the other reality is that we have to face is that college football has changed drastically. And I'm not just talking about NIL and the transfer portal. I'm talking about how the Big Ten has changed drastically, how there are new teams, how it's more competitive, how the floor is raised. Teams, you know, Northwestern is not the Northwestern of 15 years ago. And maybe I get the years wrong, but at one point Northwestern was looked at as a win almost year in and year out. And that's not the case. There are just no bad teams anymore. We saw that in like Purdue when, you know, Purdue ended up going winless in the Big Ten and gave Minnesota all they could handle at home. I think that our expectations around what college football is just has to change generally. So I'll leave it at that. I'm still really excited. I think that the changes that have come are good for Minnesota because let's call it the facilities era, Minnesota was not particularly competitive. And they've been more competitive in this new era, especially under PJ Fleck. So I'm optimistic. I'm excited for what the next season will bring. And I'm really excited that they have a guy in Drake Lindsey who's on board. Because as we all know, football, the biggest discriminator you could have is a quarterback.
Derek, any thoughts?
2 thoughts for you. One positive and then one maybe challenge that I don't think it's something they can't overcome. I'm still optimistic, but one of the positives is Minnesota and teams like it, in other words, Power 4 non-blue blood programs, have definitely been the benefactor in this new era of college football in terms of amassing more talent. That's why the middle to lower half of the Big Ten has never been better, because frankly, just speaking objectively here, those teams are pulling talent from Group of Five and from FCS, and you know, are just more competitive resource wise than they've ever been. And Minnesota's been a benefactor of that. Again, I think the gap has narrowed. People are always quick to point out, well, you know, it's a lot of the same teams are still good. Yeah. But again, I think the gap has narrowed. So I think Minnesota's has been able to take advantage of that. And I think that's a good thing going forward. One of the biggest challenges that I think I see is, and again, I don't think it's something they can't overcome, is PJ Fleck will tell you, if you have more than a 30-second conversation with him, that he runs a developmental program. What does that mean? He brings in talent and sometimes raw talent, and they coach them up, so to speak, and develop them into what they hope to be NFL talent, you know, and guys getting drafted, et cetera. There's many examples now. We've had over 9 years. But what I'm getting to is, in this era of college football, that has to happen faster than ever. So you're playing younger players more quicker than you ever have. And this isn't just Minnesota, this is everybody. And you have to bring in transfers that get a few dozen practices. I mean, you talk about off-season workouts and then a few dozen practices, and they're in your program and they're playing. So gone are the days of, whether it's high school recruiting or transfer portal, we're going to bring somebody onto the team, have 2 or 3 years to get them developed, and then they're going to start in their sophomore or junior season. That's done. I mean, not saying that never happens, but that's now the exception and not the rule. So I think part of the reason, like this year and actually last year, when we do the normal thing that fans do and analysts like us do and say, why didn't they win 10 games? Where were they short? Well, in many cases, it's because they were playing inexperienced players, whether that was, you know, young freshmen or people that weren't used to the system. And so that's something they have to dial in. It's not a challenge that's unique to Minnesota, but it's something that Minnesota and teams like it, I think that's going to be a competitive front, is how fast can you get those guys adjusted.
And that's where I think they need to put more resources into. And I'm not just talking about money, because it's not about money to me. It's about time, energy, and effort behind the scenes, is getting these second and third year players, even first year guys, like say Ryan Estrada, the tailback from El Paso, the, you know, a guy like Braden Stevens, who I think can be Minnesota's Caden Wheatgen, who has a lot of speed and Minnesota needs it at a receiver position that's going to go through a lot of change. You look at someone like Roman Voss. Can he help as Minnesota graduates 3-4 tight ends? You have to get younger players ready earlier, and that doesn't happen between September and December. Like that's not when it happens. It's January through August. So I look at places like on the offensive and defensive line. All right, well, you better get Brett Carroll and Jaden Ball and DJ Shipp ready to go. Or on the defensive line, guys like Riley Sunroom, guys like Adam Kasai, guys like Jalen Hicks, can Enoch get ready at a place like Rush End right away, where Minnesota needs more pass rushers with Carter Mentz? So can you get guys ready a lot quicker? And that means it's going to be a hard offseason for those guys, and it should be, because guess what, too? You're being paid a lot more money than you ever have. And with that comes more expectations for players. Like it or not, this is what they wanted. You want to get paid like a professional athlete? You want to make six figures? Well, then it comes with more expectations within that. Because I also look at next year's schedule, boys, and I know we got a hard out here very soon, but it's like, okay, your entire non-conference is at home, where you get Eastern Illinois, and then you get an extra couple of days to prepare for Mississippi State, who comes to town. So for those of you who want to get ready for Cowbell and Will Ferrell on a crop top, they come to town the second week of September, and then you have Akron, but it's not a schedule that I view right now. And I think we'll know specific dates here in a few weeks, but Indiana is going to be a wagon. I mean, Cignetti has that thing rolling. Like, I mean, that thing is incredible right now. On the road at Seattle, where Washington in Seattle, Luke will tell you, is very, very good. Damon Williams and that crew. But you've also got a lot of first-year head coaches on this schedule. I mean, you got places like Michigan comes to town with now Kyle Whittingham. You've got Bob Chesney and UCLA coming to town. Northwestern comes to Huntington Bank Stadium. You also get to go on the road at a place like Purdue. What does on the road at Penn State look like in year one of the Matt Campbell era? Where it's, if you can put some of this stuff together, I mean, I think you can see a much more satisfying team to watch, and hopefully satisfying also wins 7-8 wins in the regular season, if not more again. But if that's going to happen, Harbaugh and this offense have to figure out a running game. They have to figure out how to adequately protect Drake Lindsey. Drake Lindsey ends the season as a redshirt freshman quarterback in the Big Ten with 18 passing touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and completing 62-63% of his passes. I mean, what a year. Now it's okay, great. And Greg Harbaugh even talked about it prior to the bowl game where it's like, okay, great. That's an outstanding place to start. I don't know what the stats are going to be, but even Harbaugh's like, I want him to be feared. Well, if you're going to be feared, you got to spend the next 9 months taking this thing very seriously, very, very seriously. And I believe Drake will, but it starts with the portal. It starts with also pouring into your young guys to get them ready, because we saw when young guys were put in spots this year, it didn't always go well at times. Yeah, and that's always going to happen, some because of inexperience. But again, I'm excited to see what they do in the portal here, or even just upcoming player retention over the next few days. Go for illustrated.com, Luke.
Yeah, we'll continue the podcast as the offseason goes on. We'll probably sprinkle in some unique episodes as well. Things we haven't done, like interviews and conversations like we did with the Board of Regents, or we interviewed Chris Vokraka, who was part of the food stuff of the University of Minnesota, and he's with Aramark. That was a really interesting conversation that I recommend you go back and listen to if you haven't yet. It's talking about the logistics of a game day for them. But we'll continue to podcast here through the off season. It might not be the same frequency. I wanted to thank you all for listening again. Derek, thanks for joining again this year to help us break down many of these games. It was fun to have you, and we know that our listeners really enjoy you. Again, thanks everyone for listening, and go Hoosiers.